We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome once again to Beyond the Game. I am Kendall Gammon, 15-year NFL veteran, and I'm joined as always by the OG of player engagement, player programs. He is Lamont Winston. Lamont, how you doing, man?
Kendall, I am doing fantastic. We have another week. It's an exciting week in sports. You know, you got the NBA playoffs going. But yes. The other thing is you got the NFL draft, and that really begins that kickoff for the 2022 season. So it's great. Everything's buzzing down here in Miami and Jacksonville. So, excited.
Yeah, it's amazing what the draft has become. Of course, we're taping this a day before the draft starts, so April 27th. And, you know, we'll talk about it a little bit later in terms of maybe my experience and with some things that you've done. And, of course, we've got a great guest in Dave Zott, former Kansas City Chief and current player relations director for the New York Jets, and just a joy, a good friend of yours, a teammate of mine for a year. So that's good as well. But the draft was always interesting. The first day was on, the first couple rounds were on TV, but it was in New York every year. And then the NFL decided, wait a minute, we've got something that we can market greatly. And I have to give them credit on this one. They've done a heck of a job, in my opinion.
Yeah, they've done a fantastic job, Kendall. You know, in the years that it was in New York, you know, everybody pointed in the country towards New York. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people couldn't really partake in it because it was long. But I think what the league has done, they've always done a fantastic job of finding opportunities, right, to market the brand and take this closer to the fans. And so taking it on the road, fantastic idea. I know they've and people are excited. Now people are traveling with it, right? And so being in Las Vegas, that is just another extension of this rollout of the National Football League in Las Vegas. And so, you know, having the Pro Bowl down there, you know, now you have the draft down there. One of these days, they might have the combine down there. So, it's really, they've done a fantastic job of immersing this draft process in the fans.
You know, it's interesting as we tape this again, April 27th. I say that date on purpose. I know it kind of dates us, but the fact is, 1992, April 27th, I was drafted in the 11th round by the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I don't know how many years that is, but it's to the day today that we're taping this. And I learned of it by watching the crawl on the bottom of the ESPN screen. And got a call right beforehand from the Pittsburgh Steelers, spoke with Coach Cower, who, quite honestly, I'd never heard of. I knew he just came from Kansas City. You, of course, know him well. But, oh, man, have we come a long way to what this year, I believe, if memory serves me correct, the people will travel to and from the stage in Las Vegas via a boat, because it's there on the water in front of the I forget which hotel, but
the Bellagio or
the Bellagio, exactly right. So it's amazing, as you said. I mean, the NFL they want to make it a year round sport, and they really have. And as I joke, they don't want the world; they just want your half. They want the attention all the time, and I'm okay with that. That's good, but there's a lot of people's worlds that are getting to change, getting ready to change right now. Some are prepared for it, many are not, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the reality of it is, you know, when, you know, once the, you know, the college hype is now over, you know, the testing is over at the combine, the all-star games, the pro days at the colleges, all the talk, all of that stuff is over now. Because tomorrow, okay, it becomes very real, right?
Yeah.
And everybody's lives and around them, their lives are going to change. And there's going to be some heartache. There's going to be some just crazy exuberance. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a whole lot of fears. They may not admit it, but there's a whole lot of fears. And it's interesting because once you get selected, you get a chance to go, you're getting invited into a work environment that's already established by pros. And right. So while everybody's kind of like celebrating, and you do yourself, I'm sure, but you're thinking about, man, what's going to be like when I get there, right? You know, because then it gets real. And so I think that it's funny, Kendall, nobody can help you at that point. No agent, no family members. When you arrive, right, it's you, right? And I know you experienced that as a rookie.
Yeah, it is. I mean, ultimately, when you get there, now you're relying on your talent level. You know, coming into the draft, into the combine and everything, if you're higher picks, you probably at this point in time, in this day and age, you have some type of media team that's helping prepare you and how you deal with your interviews, how you deal with the coaches, what to say, what not to say. And for some people, if you think that sounds kind of odd or it's hard to believe, trust me, it is absolutely true because you're trying. I mean, you're on a constant interview for these guys. But again, once you get drafted, doesn't mean you're making the squad. Certainly, if you're high draft pick, you're there. But otherwise, I mean, if you're in my position as an 11th round pick, you're scared to death. You know, I mean, for me, as I joke when I speak, it's like, okay, 11th round, I was the 291st person taken. So, you know, right away, feeling really good about myself. But you know, you at least have a chance. And confidence for NFL players is really good. But I think something, and you could probably speak to this even better than I, but it's really an insecure confidence too. I practiced incessantly out of the fear of failing. And it does get to you. I mean, it does. It does push you in a way that you've never been pushed before.
Yeah, you know, that's the reality. You know, these rookies are going to come in, and you know, I know Dave's going to come on and talk about that. You know, having been in the locker room as a seasoned vet, and then now in his role as head of player engagement for the New York Jets, Jets. But at the end of the day, I tell all the rookies, like, guys, here's the reality. You're here. No matter how you got here, you're here. So there in life, you have a chance. Somebody in this building wanted you here. Now, can you get out of your own way enough and open your mind and self up enough to really hone in and learn and humble yourself, if you will, for a lot of guys, and humble yourself, Riley, to really learn and to be say, you know what, I got talent, but I had college talent. Now can I take that college talent and make that NFL sustainable NFL talent? And I think so. You know, we try to make sure that the rookies understand, like, it's not a, we don't want them all pressured up, but we want to let them know that the pressure is real. And when you do have it, right, there's that you have resources and support to help you through it. Because, you know, one of the coaches used to always say, you know, when you get drafted, you just written your space longer. That's all, right?
Yeah.
What we're seeing with guys, you know, I mean, look at it, Kendall. I mean, now you could be a first-round draft pick for someone, and in a year, maybe two, you're gone.
Yeah.
I mean, so
yeah, you're right.
You're renting that space, you know.
That's what I always said. You're renting the space, and it's the best temporary job you'll ever have because it is temporary.
Best job you ever have. And absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going into Turner Elementary School, the fifth grade here in a few days. I guess it's in a few weeks, going to talk to them about career day and talk about the NFL, but then talk about all the peripheral that goes around it, but just talk about understanding that there's so much that goes on with not just, you know, the football side of it, but anything. There's the surrounding of everything that's looking at stuff. I'm curious, because you've been in a different position than me. I mean, is it fair to say, number one, that all eyes are on the rookies for sure, and they want to see at all times how they're responding to everything, and even to the degree of does the front office staff or the coaches, will they do some things sometimes push something on purpose just to see how a rookie reacts or see how they're going to deal with something?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's all in about growth. It's not about trying to trick the guys or put them in a bad spot, but you right. want to see, you need as many opportunities to see how these men will respond in pressure situations, because when you start really getting ready for games, that's what the game is all about. It's a right. snap of pressure. It's a snap of how you're going to respond. And so the more they can put you through some of those situations, long meetings, for instance.
Yeah. Right?
You know, you got to sit in there, and there's no more classes. So there's long meetings. Okay. You know, there's going to a walkthrough on the grass for 20 minutes, coming back in and going to another meeting. Okay. You know, can you get to work as a rookie at 6:30, right?
Yeah.
And be on time every morning, right? So there's a lot of things that go on. And I think, you know, everybody, you're right, everybody's watching. I mean, think about this. Tomorrow, all the media, they get a chance to write about something fresh now. They've been writing about, you know.
They can't wait. Yep.
So now they got you. So all the picks you're at your team, they got you now. So you're either going to give them something really positive to write about, right? That's going to help you, or you're going to serve them up something that is going to, you know, really detract from your ability to focus on your job and do your job.
Yeah, and I think it's probably not as prevalent at the higher levels of the guys that have played in the top Division I, because they're playing at such a high level and they have the championships and everything. But I know for the lower round picks, I mean, you're coming in. I mean, me, for instance, I walk into Three River Stadium, which some of people that are listening right now don't even know what that is. But that's a former Steelers stadium that I played my career in. And okay, so I look over one way and I see Rod Woodson, future Hall of Famer. And I look another way, I see Dermonti Dawson, future Hall of Famer. I look over, I see Greg Lloyd, I think arguably one of the most intense and violent linebackers that there was in the game. And certainly I can attest to that, and it's another story for another time, but getting into fight with him my first day in pads at training camp, I'm like, really, are we going to do this? But I mean, you have to fight that wow factor a little bit also. And I remember walking in and you're trying to serve up confidence in your actions and how you are. But I think if anybody says they're not intimidated going into those locker rooms, they've got to be lying, or they're just exceptional.
You know, it's interesting. I tend to believe that, you know, for instance, you know, if you're reading about the Broncos, now have Russell Wilson. So the veteran guys are like walking there like, man, I'm in the huddle with Russell Wilson. Like I got to be able to, you know, you read about him and so it's intimidating. And so when you get a draft pick, a rookie comes in there and if the coaches put you in that huddle, knowing that you only know maybe five things, right? And you go in there with a guy like Russell Wilson, guess what's going to happen? You're going to be looking. We're going to look around and say, I remember I had a rookie tell me one time, I get in the huddle when I first got to the Chiefs, and he says, man, I look around and I see Joe Montana.
Yeah.
I'm in the huddle now. You only got so much time in the huddle. And I see Marcus Allen, right? And I'm sitting here saying, I see John Hall, right? I got Tim Grunhart. I got Will. You're like, wow. And then Freddie Bray. So now you got to go to the line of scrimmage, right? and then go out there. So there's a lot of those scenarios, but I think even the guys from the big schools, Kendall, it's the same thing, man. Like, you know, all the SEC, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, when you get to a pro team, it is another level. And I don't think anybody right. would refute that if they're being honest.
Yep. Now, let me ask you, because you were on the player engagement. You were a coach when you came to Kansas City, but you were on the player engagement, player program side of things also. Were you in the draft room, and would they turn to you every once in a while? Would they ask you to refresh them on the character of an individual, perhaps?
Sure, absolutely. And I know Dave will speak to that as well. You know, I came in as a scout, so, you know, I had scouting reports, and I had to do that, right? And so, but, you know, as we got more involved in kind of the background, the personal players, absolutely. You know, it's like, let me hear, where are we at with so-and-so? Tell me, walk through us with this one more time. And, you know, at the end of the day, they wanted to know, Mr. Peterson wanted to know, the head coach wanted to know, all right, Lamar wanted to know, do we have a plan for this player?
Okay. Right?
And yes, we do. And we walk through the plan. So every now and then, yeah, they turn around, Lamont, give us the thoughts, recap us real quick. Okay, we got this. Okay, we've had these discussions. Okay, so now what's the plan again? You walk through the plan again. Everybody feels good. And they become a chief.
Yeah, it's just that easy. I wish it was just that easy. Take our listeners into it also in terms of, I mean, the board up there, the grades and however they do that. But the fact is, there's not a person being drafted that seems like, oh, we didn't know anything about him. I mean, you've got every single name up there, right? Hundreds.
I learned from some veteran scouts, like, you know, there are no hidden gems. There are people that didn't do their job. And you know that right. didn't go the extra to find out about this particular player, but there's no hidden gems. You know, what's really crazy is that, you know, they get the board set, and you have another whole separate board that's a priority free agent board. So that's the second draft, so to speak, process that happens immediately after the draft, right? And so people don't really know about that board. There's priority free agents. And then there's free agents, right? But on this board over here, and those, they give you color-coded dots that mean certain things, medical, character, you know, all these different alcohol. It's a lot of different things.
Yeah.
You see guys' names up there that were first-round grades, and then they're now you're in the third round. When you look at the board, you're like, okay, there's these two guys that appeared at first-round grades. We're in the third round. Obviously, they got issues, things that, you know, kind of scaring teams away. But then, you know, you're sitting there, you're like, man, all this talent, this first round talent's there. Can we get to the fourth round? Well, you know, people go through it and they say, well, okay, if Lamont's there at the fourth round with that first round grade, top 10 maybe, first round grade, that's when you see teams take those shots, right? Because they think, because monetarily, you know, it outweighs the risk, maybe. If it's a medical, you got your medical staff saying, you know, we can deal with it at this level. So it really is interesting, man. And you have guys that I know, there's some teams, I know one of my former teams, the Raiders, were kind of known. You see a guy that was in the fifth round and he's taken in the second round. Where did he come from? How did he shoot up the board? But it's really all how people see the players after they've done the work. And so it's definitely not an exact science for sure. But it's an ongoing process, much later than just kind of right after the last player in the seventh round.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay, well, you're talking about your experiences, and we're going to bring somebody in now, Dave Zott, and he's going to tell us about his experiences. Dave was a 14-year NFL veteran guard, an All-Pro 1 year, I think maybe All-Rookie, just did a lot of different things at a high level, especially for somebody being a lower-round draft pick. He was a teammate of mine for 1 year, even though that was an injury-plagued year for him. So with that, we're going to bring in Dave Zott.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Zotter, how we doing?
Doing great. Doing great. It's a beautiful day here in Florham Park, New Jersey, and spring has arrived finally. It was a long winter, boys, but it is here, and it's a very obviously important week. It dominates the news, even though we're in the off season. It's really incredible to me how the NBA finals are going on, but the lead stories are the NFL. You know, and it's for us, it was a great business to be involved with, and still be involved with, because you have the NBA, some of the world's greatest athletes, they're in the middle of their pursuit at a world championship, but the draft and who's picking and who's moving up and all the scenarios, that dominates the lead story. So it's an incredible game, and we celebrate 102 years, I believe, of this game now, and it's been a great run.
Well, you know, Dave, you know, again, our path started together in 93 when I came to the Chiefs. It was a very, as coming from as a college coach, but then coming in as a scout, and you really came in there and you started looking at this vaunted offensive line. You had, you know, the coaches, Marty, the Jimmy Rays, the all of these different, you know, the different coaches, and you look at the players and you're like, wow. And I know back then, it was the same thing as now, right? You get drafted, sure. You're ready for the draft, but then you have to show up from wherever you come from. You show up in Kent at your team, and then it's go time, right?
Correct. And just to hit historical, I was a history poli-sci major at Penn State, so I love the history. I bore my wife with the facts all the time. But when I got drafted in 1990, there was not this role that I was fortunate to have Lamont Winston in. And then I actually had his brother here with the Jets, Kevin, when I came here. But when I showed up in 1990, literally the first person I met in the building was Mike Webster, all-time great.
Oh, man.
Wow. And you showed up, and you tried to figure it out. You know, Howard Mudd, the late, great Howard Mudd, an offensive line coach, who among the people that know was one of the greatest technicians as an offensive line coach this game has ever seen. And I was fortunate enough to have him to teach me, because I was not as skilled, or my technique wasn't close to what it needed to be when I showed up. But things like life decisions. I remember my parents calling me, do you have insurance? I said, I don't know. I don't know if I have insurance. So like, I literally went upstairs, and on the fifth floor where we got paid was a gal who did payroll, and she did insurance. She gave me some forms, and like, you need help figuring out, because every other job I'd had before then was, you know, under the table cash kind of deals. So, all these things. And for our listeners, that Lamont's role, my role didn't exist. Now we take all these guys through these things, and 90% of our players, this is their first job. They've never received a W-2 or a 1099. They're starting to. Some of the top guys with the NILs, which is a really hot topic, right, which just came into the world, which I'm all for, because some of these guys have some financial experience before they show up here. They may all our pre-drive visits, I'm like, did you have NIL? Then you really need to be filing taxes here in about a week for the first time. Right. So all these things, this life experience, they haven't really achieved. They've never really had any internships in the summer because, as you know, guys, they were up on campus working out, trying to stay on pace to graduate, taking summer classes. So all their peers on campus have taken 2 or 3 internships in the summer. They never did. So they never received any income. There was never any tax consequence because of that. So it's just, they're very, very skilled and very, very focused in one skill set. And we need to kind of broaden their skill set a little bit because, you know, the real world's knocking on their door for the first time in a lot of areas.
Dave, as you look back, coming from a big program in Penn State, number one, did you go to the combine? I didn't know where you were at with that one. Then number two, can you take us back to maybe your draft day or even the days preceding and what was going on in your head?
Sure. So, Kendall, I was fortunate to be part of a national championship team at Penn State. We had a tremendous amount of talent, obviously. I played my freshman year, didn't start, but played. And then I actually won the starting guard job that spring, came back in the fall, and we had a bunch of defensive line graduate. So Joe Paterno asked me to move over to defense. So I went from guard to D tackle, played there my sophomore year. And then I moved to nose guard my junior year and then back to offense my senior year.
Wow.
So I did a lot of moving and I started all those positions, but it didn't really help me on the draft board come April. So I always say to people, you know, when I get calls for donations at Penn State, I said I donated when I moved around all those times because I was hot. Because, guys, I was a highly recruited guy in college. I mean, high school, you know, had a tremendous amount of offers, wrestling or football. I go to Penn State, didn't really earn anything, and then I end up fortunate enough to be all pro in the pros. What happened in those 4 years at Penn State, you know? I got moved around a lot. So when it came to draft day, you know, it was different back then. I wasn't so promoted, didn't have so many guys there. I had some people predict I was a second round talent all the way down to, you know, late round talent. Back then it was 12 rounds.
Yeah.
So yeah, 28 teams, not 32, 28 teams, 12 rounds. So I didn't get picked the first day. And back then they did multiple rounds on the first day, and then they kind of just kept going. So I didn't get in the first day and got picked. I said, well, I better finish graduate. I don't know what this is going to happen. You know, I was working toward graduating, and I got picked, fortunate to get picked in the 7th round. I was invited to the Senior Bowl. I was a combine guy, Kendall. I did fairly well at the combine. Some of those, you know, measurables, I guess. Yep. I did well enough in. I was at the Senior Bowl. The staff that coached us at the Senior Bowl was the Kansas City Chiefs staff. Mm-hmm. And so Carl Peterson and Marty and, you know, the group must have done something enough well to catch their eye to take a chance on me in the 7th round.
So Dave, so that's interesting. So, you know, Kendall and I were talking about just like that mindset sometimes, you know, like you leading up to the draft, you know, the combine and, you know, all-star game combine, the pro, you know, the pro to the colleges. Your situation, you know, you played offensive line, you played 2 years high level at defensive line, you play your senior year. So when you get drafted by the Chiefs in the 7th round, what was going through your mind? Was it like, I got this? Or I'm going to Kansas City, and when I get there, were you like, okay, can I haven't really, you see Mike Webster, a Hall of Famer. I mean, where sure. was your confidence level?
Low. Low. I remember, now you got to understand, in my family, I had one brother who played center. And he used to burst out of the huddle and run to the line just like Webby did. And he had his, you know, had his jersey all taped up, and he was piped up, and he thought he was Mike Webster. So when I saw this guy, I was like, oh my goodness. And he introduced himself to me and said, Dave, great to have you here. And a little history lesson, Mike came to the Chiefs to be a coach. We had apparently there's an injury there before, and he said, I could still play. So he went back in the equipment room, put his pads on. Yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. And played two more years. That's why they drafted Grunny to take his position the next year. So my confidence was low. And then we go to training camp back there. It was at Liberty, north of the city, William Jewell College. I never felt heat and humidity like that in my life. Double sessions pads. First practice started at like 9:30 or something, 9:30-ish, quarter to 10 maybe, or yeah, probably 9:30. And the second practice started at 2 o'clock, and that heat would be shivering off that field, grass field, still shivering. I was like, oh my goodness. And then we'd stretch, and we used to have to run to this lower field at William Jewell, all the big guys that had jogged down there, and Webby was gone. And Webby was like leading the pack, sprinting. And I remember talking to my older brothers, you know, about a week in the camp. They said, how's it going? I said, I don't know. I said, I'm not getting any reps. I'm fighting. I'm getting one-on-ones. I'm not getting any reps. We had 17 offensive linemen in camp. And back then on a 47-man roster, you're only keeping seven. No practice squad, guys. Right. No P squad. Yeah. So you either made it or you didn't, you know. I said, I don't know. I said, I don't know what's going to happen. I know one thing. This guy Webster, I can't even keep up with the 17-year vet. He runs everywhere. And I'm exhausted. So, my confidence was low. And then we played a fifth preseason game. Our first preseason game was in Berlin, Germany. And we played the Rams at the time, you know, the Anaheim Rams out there and L.A. Rams. And I played a lot. They basically, the starters started. They pulled us all off and they threw a bunch of us out there. And that was kind of the start of my opportunity. You know, I did enough. I didn't even really have any reps in practice. I was just flying around. And then I slowly got more and more time, you know, but it was tough. And there wasn't guys like Lamont in your corner kind of pulling on you, you know, encouraging you. It was staffs were smaller. It was a different time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Lamont, I want to ask you real quick. I mean, you saw Dave come in. So this is kind of a unique situation we have. Can you remember what you saw in him and talking with him or whatnot? I'm just curious if there's any memories that get jarred when you see Dave.
You know, Dave was already. I came in '93, and like I said, I came from University.
Oh, he was already there. That's right.
As a football coach, but the thing about it was, and that's one of the reasons I think you know that I was one of the Chiefs. You know, hired me as a coach. Excuse me, as a scout, because of that coaching background. But you get to Kansas City, and you look at that as a running back guy. It's easy to look at him. I looked at the offensive line, and I'm looking at these guys like I did my little homework. I'm kind of reading, and it was like wow, it was really like a wow, right? And then with 93, we got Marcus Allen. And I'm sitting here like and Joe Montana, and I'm watching these guys. And how they worked. I know Will Shields is a great friend of ours, all of ours, and he was a rookie, right? But it was amazing how you watch Dave. I'll never forget. It was really the left side. It was Grunny, Dave, and John Aul. And when you talk about toughness, we would go back and look at tape, and it was just crazy. I used to tell Dave all the time, I used to love watching Dave pull. Because somebody was getting ready to get rolled. And it was all the time, like really all the time. So, you know, as I watched those guys, I told myself in this locker room, I started doing the player programs thing. It was, you know what, I got to be on point because you don't want to piss those guys off, right? You need to be right, know what you're doing. And I know Dave, they welcomed me. They were pros. And they really ran the locker room, the offensive line group did. Like that was my, and Dave was an enforcer, and he may not say, but he was an enforcer for real.
Different times, different mindset. Well, there's a right way to do things, guys, and you got to be completely committed. And I, it was tough for that group. And I say thank you, Muppet. You know, I had a wrestling kind of mentality, and you know, where I grew up in North Jersey, and you know, the mindset we had, and you know, coming from a big program, we had to fight and scratch to get on the field, and so there was a standard that was set. And Will came, it was arguably the most talented out of that group. He came in as a rookie and really, you know, fortified that. And when you're going to take that kind of mindset, then you go down an alley, you want to have someone with you. And we had a bunch of dudes with us, and wherever challenge was ahead of it, didn't matter. We're going out to that godforsaken place in Oakland to go play. All those guys, I don't know what they're thinking, how they dress like that. You know, I don't know. It's Halloween every Sunday out there. You know, they all come out. But that mindset was fortunate, and it started with guys like Dave Lutz and Richard Baldinger and Alt when we were there, and then, you know, Grunny and I, and then Will later grew up in that, and we just took on that mindset and replicated it, and we tried to hand it down when we left. You know, the greatest thing to do is to kind of, you know, leave that that DNA and that continued tone and attitude and approach to the game when you leave. So, it was, you know, I'm as excited as anyone to see, you know, obviously I work with the Jets, and they're my number one team, but number two is Kansas City. Still want to see them be successful. It's great to see them continue with see what they're doing.
So Dave,
go ahead.
So Dave, so tell our listeners, let's kind of back it up a little bit. And in your role as head of player engagement, behind the scenes, what have you been doing the last few months? And then really fast forward to what you've been doing like the last maybe 2 weeks.
Sure. So we start, I was at the combine, fortunate enough to go to the combine, spend a lot of time there with potential draft picks. We go through an interview process, and I don't evaluate film. I tell them that when I come in, I don't watch a snap. We have plenty of people in the building. That's what they do. I just want to get a feel for your personality, your character, and how you're going to fit in this locker room. So interviewed, spent 6 days in Indy, interviewed almost 70 guys there. And then we have the pre-draft visits. Each club is allowed to bring in 30 draft picks before the draft in person in the building. And was fortunate to be part of that role. So there's a lot of time evaluating, write my evaluation, and then it goes up to the guys with a lot more authority and a bigger, you know, payroll than me, you know, to make the decision, which is going to start tomorrow.
So Dave, let me ask you this question. So, you know, tell our listeners how it feels when you're in a meeting or you're in meetings and, you know, coach, you're talking about various players, and then you have to come in with, they're talking about the athletic talent and they're dancing around some things, but you have to come in and say what the real deal is, right?
It's probably not popular very often either.
No, it's not. I've said to my wife, and I'm probably going to get fired today, you know, so, because you got to be true to yourself. Like if this is your instinct and this is what this is telling you about this individual, a lot of guys are talented, but to me, it's the mindset. Do they love football? Are they going to sacrifice all the things that need to be sacrificed to become the player we need them to be? Is football their priority? You know, are they tough enough? Are they smart enough? And especially in a market like New York, where there's a lot of distractions, a lot of places they can go, a lot of things to do, is football first? And have they proved that in the past? Even if they've made mistakes, right? We've all made mistakes. I made plenty of mistakes. My wife tells me I make them every day, right? So, but big mistakes, you know, did they learn from them? And is that something, you know, talk to me about that issue that occurred at some point in college, what have you. Did they learn from it? Did they repeat it? You know, you don't want to have those distractions. We've all been in those locker rooms where something's going on and that's everyone's talking about it. What happened with this guy? And everyone's focused, and it just deters from the ability to win football games and be successful. So sometimes I cannot look at the talent, guys. That's why I don't do it, because I could be sucked into it as well. This guy, you know, I just focus on what I believe, how he will contribute to this team and what kind of person and character he has.
Hey, David, could you talk to the listeners in terms of I think many people listening, watching would be like, okay, this dude played 14 years. He was an all-pro. He surely made some decent money and whatever, yet he's decided to get back into this side of it. What drove you to do what you're doing now and being part of the player engagement for the Jets?
You know, Kendall, it's a great question. I've had a couple of rookies that I always close my meeting with them, these pre-draft visits. Do they have any questions for me? And I had one young man say, how did you get in your role that you did?
Oh, that
was a great question. So I never really pursued it. I was always a guy that tried to mentor people. I tried to help young guys, young offensive linemen, the next seventh round pick guard or tackle or center, try to mentor them, spend time with them after practice, bring them home to dinner, you know. And I just had that kind of, you know, mentorship, servant heart. And I think that's what the organization eventually saw in me to offer me this role. I when I retired after 14 years, they wanted me to come back for 15, but I was done. I knew I was tired. I was tired. I was 36 years old. I had enough. So I coached for 2 years. For our listeners in the Kansas City market, you know, they're well aware, or maybe, you know, new listeners, I have a special needs son, my oldest boy, special needs. So the coaching path as a second career was not a viable one for me because you have to jump around a lot. But my son was in a great school. That's why I left Kansas City. They had great resources up to about 6-7 years old. And then back here, there was a lot of great opportunities for him. So I coached for 2 years, and then we had a coaching change. And they asked me to serve as chaplain. So I served for 2 years as our team chaplain. And when the team was still in Long Island, so I was living in Morristown, New Jersey, driving 72 miles, which doesn't sound like a lot, but my record is 4 hours from door to door because GW Bridge, Cross Bronx Expressway, you know, all that kind of stuff, to go do a Bible study with the guys and spend time with them and minister to them. And then the team moved to Florham Park, 7 miles from where I've been living the whole time, and they asked me to come into this role. So for 2 years I served, and when I moved over, that was right in my backyard. So they asked me to continue to stay on. I'm going on my 14th season in this role. So it's been a great second career, which I didn't really anticipate coming, but I love it because I get to serve the whole roster, you know.
Sure, yeah, sure.
From the starting quarterback, first round pick, all the way to the, you know, the practice squad guy who's trying to stay on and make the club. I serve all of them and I treat them all the same.
Dave, what's your number one? These rookies with tomorrow, or this starting tomorrow, in a couple of days after, you know, when they wrap this thing up, you're going to have about, between draft picks, free agents, you're probably going to have about 25 guys that's going to come to New York. What is the number one thing you're going to share with that room?
Well, number one, I have to create trust at some point. And over the course of, I'll have Lamont and Kendall, I have them every day for an hour. I have them the last portion of the day for an hour. And we're going to cover a myriad of topics all over the, you know, we have programming we've played out. We have mandatory things we have to do that the league asks. But I'm trying to build trust and build a relationship with them. Really, the number one thing their first year is time management. Once they have no more classes and no more finals, there's no more papers. All it is football. But a lot of times they think they know how to study film and they think they know how to prepare as a pro, but they're just learning those things. As I got, you know, we used to have a meeting every Wednesday. We would stay late and do the blitz reel. And we'd have the running backs in there, the tight ends in there, everyone involved on offense that had to do with the blitz. And we would spend extra time as a unit together communicating, you know, when we motioned and they rotated the linebackers and now the guy's off, you know, the wheel's now on the edge. He was stacked, talking to Marcus, talking to Kimball Anders, talking to guys about what their sight adjust is on this blitz. A lot of young guys, once practice is over and the mandatory stuff's done, they want to roll past the security gate and go home. And once they're home, majority of the time that iPad's not going on. There's some real disciplined guys that they are. But we emphasize, hey, take an extra half an hour, spend extra time, find a veteran that would mentor you, show you how to break down film. You know, even at the great, you know, big programs, Power Five schools, they probably weren't challenged in those games as much as they're going to get challenged every day in practice and every time on Sunday. So those little things they learn, those little cues, little reads, will help them so much in getting them ramped up to be able to compete every week. It's the little things that really help them be successful. But the time management piece, you know, they want to go home and get on the game, you know.
Yeah.
And that's okay to relax. If they need that portion, just take another half hour here. So when you're sitting in that locker on Sunday morning and you have anxiety because you're gonna go play some stud, hey, I spent another 2 hours in the building this week getting prepared, you know. I like my game plan today. I like how I'm going to set them. I'm liking how my cues, my reads, what have you. Just learning that, the time management, building confidence, and learning how to prepare as a pro.
Mm-hmm. So then with that, that's the number one. The time management is huge, and it's at the top. Now, what's that number one thing you're going to tell them about family and friends now that they're for the foreseeable future? They're Jets. So what are you going to tell them about? Because that family and friends, that's getting into that personal kind of, but you got to say it. What's Dave's not going to tell them about family and friends?
Everyone in their life, and trust me, no one got to this place or this opportunity without a lot of help. A lot of God-given ability that was put into your body and your DNA. But a lot of people helped you along the way. And those people closest to you that mean that much to you, I mean, there's people you want to help and support, but there's also there's givers and takers in this world. And you can't have too many takers that are continuing pulling on you, distracting you. If you have to, change your phone number. If you need a no person in your life, I do it. I do it very well. But I know as a 22, 23-year-old guy, I didn't do it well. I said yes to everything because I didn't want to tell people something they didn't want to hear. You know, written on my board up here, we're going to spend a lot of time in conflict training, like how to have these tough conversations with people. Now, they're not going to want to hear what you have to tell them, but you know, I'm spending 10, 11 hours in the building preparing myself between, you know, post practice, regen in the tubs and, you know, all the things in the training room. And I don't have a whole lot of time. You know, and they're going to want to come to New York to see you play. They expect you. I tell them on Saturdays before you get to the hotel, you can't be running around via sightseeing. Give them a map. Go get on that double decker bus that everyone else drives around on. Okay. Mom and dad, enjoy yourself. Go get them a tour guide. But that's not you. You know, you got to stay here and be able to pour everything you have out onto that game on Sunday. You see it happen. They try to be too much. Too many people. And it wears them out.
Yeah. Let me have one more question here. So we're talking about the rookies. And obviously, listeners, Dave's, you know, they're going to be dropped off in his office. Trust me, that's going to be that. But then you have a number of veterans now. And so for veterans, they've already made the team. But tell our listeners what you're doing for those men. Again, because they're not rookies and you're not necessarily needing to help them with the football piece, but what are you doing with your veteran population now during this time?
Yeah, Lamont, that changes every year with free agency and future signings. The futures, the guys who get signed in January right after the season, then you have free agency in March. So we have 6 free agents we signed. I got to build a relationship and trust with them as well. But to your point, we have a slate of veteran education that started last week with our onboarding, all our new players. We did an onboarding session. They got to meet personally the payroll person, the ticket person, help them get them signed up with any insurance changes, all those things. Now them always come to me for everything. Okay, you can go to payroll if you got to talk to someone about how many tickets you had last week or what have you. But that was last week. We have a financial class. In fact, today, gentleman Patrick Kearney, former NFL Defensive Player of the Year.
Sure, absolutely.
He's coming to speak about his approach to finances as a player. He's a guy that was a UVA undergrad, first round pick, signed a big free agent deal, NFL defensive player of the year. And then when he was done after 12 years, he went to Columbia University and he got his MBA. So I call it my title for this session is the former NFL defensive player of the year with an Ivy League MBA. How many people have that on their resume?
Yeah.
Probably one, but I know of one guy.
Yeah. He's a tremendous man.
Oh, he's a great man. His approach, yeah. It's very sound and it gets guys thinking. I've had him in before. So I have veterans. That's today. Next week, I have a tax firm coming in talking about taxes and how it affects a professional athlete and withholdings. And, we're in a state where we're all progressive tax states, but we have a higher tax rate than most other states. Then I conclude another one about family. I have some family attorneys coming in a few weeks to talk about all the dynamics when it comes to, cohabitation and paternity and prenuptials and all those type of things, all those conversations. So I have like a veteran slate of programming. And then I roll right into the week after that, all my rookies every day. And I have some speakers that are very interesting topics. Very interesting people, and I always make that available to our vets if they want to come sit in anytime. They're able to come. We welcome them.
Dave, I'm curious, and this actually kind of goes to you a little bit, Lamont, also. But Dave, so last week or our last session, we had Michael Bennett on, and we talked about some really personal things. People ask me a lot of things about the NFL when I speak, and I always say, listen, the NFL is a violent game and violent people don't grow up in Beverly Hills. They generally grow up in violent places and they have issues. And I, for one, I know I certainly could have used counseling much earlier than in my life than I got it. Michael Bennett talked about some things last week, which was just incredibly vulnerable, and kudos to him for handling that. But I mean, do you, Dave, and even to you, Lamont, I mean, do you guys train in trying to recognize some of these more internal problems that may not end up surfacing till later on in their life, but sometimes if you can get a hold of them earlier, how do you go about that? Do you have any training on that? Is that something that you will go to players with as well?
Dave, you want to take it and I'll come back?
Yeah, sure. We are trained in kind of the keys and the alerts and the signals, especially that's why you have to get to know them, because if you see their behavior change, position coaches, their teammates, their significant others in their inner circle. You know, it's one reason I get to know the families, their wives, their girlfriends. But yes, we're fortunate. What I've seen, and Kendall, to your point, we have a team clinician. He's fantastic. And I tell in front of the whole roster, I go, I see him, I speak to him. I don't have all the answers to the questions of life and the situations that I come across. I go to him for counsel. And the greatest growth I've seen in this league over the 30 years I've been in it is in mental health and mental health resources. Mm-hmm. They just came out it's actually a two-pager. There's so many resources available to our players. It's on two pages, front and back, six different distinct avenues, whether it be through the Cigna, their insurance provider, through the on-site clinician, which we have 5 days a week in the building, the trust, which is a branch of NFLPA. I mean, it goes on and on and on. NFL Lifeline, which is a 24/7, 1-800 number if you want to just call in. And these are open not just to them, but to their families, anyone in our household. It's an amazing resource. So, yes, we've seen, and what I'm very excited about is the players who are the forerunners who said, I have an issue and I want to talk about it. And we've had those guys in the league, and we had one in our building years ago, Brandon Marshall, fantastic advocate for mental health and mental health resources. And he's been very, very open about that. And that helps other guys speak about it. I would have benefited from it earlier in my career, and it really wasn't as available, and it was my immaturity probably looking at it the way I should have. But now it's prevalent, it's around, it's in the building, you can call someone, you can go through the insurance provider, it's everywhere. And the nation is one in five in our country as a mental health, you know, concern of some level. You know, we've seen a lot of anxiety. I don't know if it's COVID or, but more anxious, you know, anxiousness in our culture and in our young men coming in the building now. So I'm very, very excited and I'm thankful for how the league has taken the approach and the amount of resources they put in into mental health.
You know, Kendall, Dave talked about, you know, we and people in this role, you know, it's a couple of things. One, we get information, and I think Dave would agree that information in personal is really powerful. There was a time when you could talk about, you know, a guy's family or a guy drank and, you know, he's a good old dude and, you know, and all that. But it would just go right out the door because they really wanted the talent. But what's happened is when we get information, we can now really dig into the information. We have the clinical resources around us. And so when there's questions to be asked, you know, it's not leaning on our own understanding, right? We have experts to help us. But the one thing I think that's unique about every person in this role with these teams is that we're able to show these young men what doesn't fit in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. And that each of them have certain things that don't fit. And we help them identify those things that don't fit. Because the thing, if they continue to bring things to the league in this environment that don't fit, there's going to be issues, right? And so a lot of times these young men don't know, right, what doesn't fit in the multi-billion dollar industry side of the National Football League. And we're there to help them, right? We spoke about it being okay. You know, it's interesting because when people in Dave's role, you know, when he's normalized his clinician, part of the process, right? The clinician that's there, you know, 5 days a week, normalized. When I started in 94, you know, we had our clinician, Betsy Klein, but it was really the environment wasn't like she was normalized. Everybody knew who she was, but I'm not going by her, right? You could be torn up inside, but I'm not going by her. But I think now, if things have become more transparent, I think we've had incidences in the country in our social fabric that's kind of really brought this out in front. And it's okay when you're seeing professional athletes say, you know, I'm not doing well, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And people are looking at them no longer like, oh, okay, well, something's wrong with you. No, it's what do you need? And so people are running to them. So I think we've been constantly getting trained. I think we get trained. A lot of it is by the experiences of the players that, you know, that we end up dealing with, because some of this stuff, Dave, and again, you're in New York. I mean, some of this stuff you can't prepare for. It happens.
I've never been around it myself. Yeah. I've seen just about everything now. It's not a time I can think now. I've seen it all. But to your point, Lamont, and again, I went through a very trying time as a young player. In 1995, we had a great football team. We had five couples that were all having children on the team. My wife and I had our first child, and everyone else was smiling and having a great time. We were really struggling. Fast forward to where we were the number one team in the AFC at the time. The Dallas Cowboys were the number one team in the NFC. We're going to go play on Thanksgiving Day down in Dallas. It's a game I look forward to all year. But that week, 3 days before that game, we had taken my son to a specialist at Children's Mercy. And he said, your son will never walk, he'll never talk, he'll never be an independent living adult. Mm-hmm. All right. In the midst of the season. And my wife became very emotional, obviously. I'm trying to be the rock. I got to go get on a plane and go play Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. I did not play very well, okay? I should have went immediately to Betsy Klein and sat down and talked to her. And now guys are more open. I should have been more vulnerable about it. I don't know who I told. I didn't tell anybody for a while, you know. I should have been more vulnerable, but I was 26 years old, you know. Sure. Didn't know how to handle all that at the time. So to your point, to normalize it. At the time, Betsy was around, or, you know,
yeah,
when people had an issue right away. Now, normalize it. Our clinicians are here all the time. Him and his staff are around all the time. They see everybody talking to him.
Right. They're
out of practice. It's normal.
Exactly.
It's normal.
Right.
It's normal to have issues.
Yes.
Okay? Correct. We all have them. So I could have really benefited from it in 95. And then they've just built, like I said, the league has just taken such a great approach to this. Sure. And the union, give them their mm-hmm. as well. But they have so much more aspects to mental health. And this is part of growing up as a man, right? All these challenges we have, these guys have never, the homes they've grown up, the environments they're in, these are all different steps they have to take along the way. And all of a sudden their thrust is to be the leader in the house only because the league says they have talent enough to play the game, okay?
And they got the money.
Meanwhile, they're 21 years old. Yeah. Some of them are 20 because they're coming out as juniors and everyone's looking up to them. They're not nearly prepared to have those, sure, to have that voice and that stance in the family. They still want to be the son, you know, and have the father go to their father for questions and advice and direction. So it's a lot for a young man to go through, you know, all at once.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, I know we've reached our limit. It's been a great time today. I really appreciate you coming on. You know, obviously, haven't known you since I played the 1 year with you in Kansas City, my first year, your last there, I think. But thanks so much for coming on today.
Guys, thanks for having me. It's great seeing you. And I love to see the last episode you sent me. It was fantastic.
Dave, you've always been, like I said, you know, a beacon for me. And I just watched how, you know, Grooney and Will, I mean, it's just that you, man, it's how you carried yourself as a pro and as a father, as a man of Christ. And it in my early development in player development, you know, it was like, okay, this is why I tell the truth. This is why I'm honest, because it's men like you, Dave, that, you know, I'm admiring, and you are my benchmark. So there's no secret, no surprise that you're doing this role. God made it for you, and you're doing a phenomenal job, and we wish you all the best with your new family members.
They're all coming. They don't know it yet, but they're coming. I don't know yet, but to your point, I approach this with a servant heart of Christ, and that's how the guys come over for dinner, I take them fishing, but I'm pouring into their life, and it's a fantastic role to be able to do that every day, you know.
Well, you're doing
all right. Thanks, Dave, appreciate it so much.
Thanks, guys, take care.
Speak to you, Dave, talk to you soon.
Appreciate it. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Man, Lamont, just a solid guy. You've known me even longer than I have, but I mean, I think it really brought some things out that most people just don't realize goes on all the time.
I mean, you think about that, everybody, there's five couples in the locker room that's having children, and maybe a couple of it in its position group. And Michael Bennett spoke of this last week. You know, it's like, you know, everybody's excited. Wives are excited, you know, and
yeah,
and your child is the one that has the challenges. And then you have to go to practice. Then you mm-hmm. have to get on a plane and go play a game. And he just told you, didn't play well, you know? And so how do you prepare for that, right?
Yeah.
But that also defines and redefines and reshapes kind of your approach to your game now. You know, you got some decisions to make, because it's not about you. It's about your family. And that, like Dave mentioned, what are you really, truly willing to sacrifice? And it's interesting, Kendall, because there's young men that, and they'll sit there and you watch the draft, you know, they're walking into this league with the same similar challenges, right? And they haven't played down in the National Football League.
Yeah, it couldn't be said any better. And then, you know, quite honestly, that's what we talk about. That's the name of the show, Beyond the Game. It's not, you know, as we've said, the easiest time for most players is on the field when the clock's running. But when the clock stops,
life keeps going, and it's people like yourself and Dave Zotten and everybody else on the 32 teams that work on the player engagement, the player development, that makes so much of a difference. So, you know, with that, Lamont, as always, appreciate you joining me. You are the OG. You're the godfather of this, and it's only because you simply wanted to make a difference and help people, and so I commend you.
Thank you, Kendall, and I thank all of our listeners for giving us your time. We appreciate you, and we hope that we're giving you a perspective that give you more of an appreciation for the teams that you support and the players that you love. I thank you, and have a wonderful, wonderful week.
That's awesome. He is Lamont Winston. I'm Kendall Gammon. We'll see you next time on Beyond the Game.